Yeah, welcome back. Welcome back to Old Let's Talk About It. We got another special edition today, but before we continue, hit that subscribe button. It's going to be on one of these sides of the screen. Click that button. I'm going to give you like 2 seconds. Okay, cool. Thank you. Anyway, we got a special edition today. Special Father's Day edition. Happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there. Special time of the year that doesn't always get highlighted as much as other. I won't even just say one specific one. I just say it doesn't get highlighted as much as other holidays. But it's a very important one because there wouldn't be any of these kids out here without some fathers. Somebody doing some, you know, some in and out, you know. And I ain't talking about the restaurant either. In and out. I brought on a young man that's been on before. He just happened to be related to me. I brought on my brother. And I let him introduce himself and then I'll get back to it.
What's your name? Hey, you already know what it is. Why we always say that? You already know what it is. Listen, I'm Eric Crawley. They call me the Bishop. Yes, it's my brother. I'm just a regular dude. Originally from Emporia. I currently live in Suffolk. I don't know what kind of introduction y'all want. I'm the father of three. My oldest is 16, 14, and then I have a 10-year-old. So I got three boys, been married 17 years. I love being a father, love being a mentor. I'm currently the pastor of the Dwelling Place Ministries. I'm in law enforcement. I write stage plays. So yeah, I thank you for putting me on the show. Because you could have asked anybody to do this, but it's an honor. It's an honor. And shout out to all the other guests you've had on from all walks of life. I love it because it shows that it's not just one dimensional. You don't just have one type of guest on. You have a bunch of different guests. So shout out to everybody that's been on the podcast. Much respect. Very good podcast. So yeah, like, share, subscribe, comment, click that subscribe button, that notification button, all that good stuff. All right, let's roll.
I appreciate that. I appreciate that. Let's get right to it. Okay, we're here for Father's Day, and I asked you to come on because even as a father, I've, you know, kind of closely to the side as well, seeing you grow as a father from having one son to two to three, and now being in a position where you can mentor and be an example, you know, overall. So I want to start at the beginning. Just we're going to go through like the stages of fatherhood and how you've changed and grown and matured through the different stages. So, okay, at what age did you have your first son, and at what stage in your life were you at?
All right, so we had my oldest son in 2005. 2005, I was... we've been married, Michelle and I, we've been married for a year, just under a year, actually, when he was born. I hope I'm right. Yeah, because we got married in 2004. He was born in 2005. And I was still living in Emporia. I was working at Cracker Barrel, waiting tables. At that stage in life, I had no plan. I was just a dude that was in love. And we got married, and I didn't have a college degree, still don't have a college degree. Again, I didn't have a plan. I was just going with the motions of trying to work and pay bills and didn't really know where I was going in life. Never knew I would end up in law enforcement. So, yeah, when we found out she was pregnant with Rice, it was like, all right, okay. Yeah, we doing this. There was no... again, there was no structure to it. It was just like, all right, you're pregnant. All right, let's rock out. Let's go with it. So, yeah, that's where I was at.
So it wasn't anything, even though y'all were married, at that point, had you discussed, like, we want kids? Or like you said, y'all were just transitioning? Because y'all were just moving down to Suffolk around that time too, right?
No, we hadn't moved to Suffolk yet. We were still living in Emporia. So we were actually, when we found out she was pregnant with Rice, we were still living on Main Street. And so when we found out she was pregnant, we weren't married yet. And we were just dating and in love. But we knew we were supposed to be married, but we were just still dating and in love and loving life and going to Virginia Beach and hanging out. And then we found out, oh, okay, she's pregnant. Wow. But it's crazy, though, because it's just crazy how life happens. The weekend that I got the engagement rings, The next week we found out she was pregnant. So my plan was to propose to her anyway, but then the next week we found out she was pregnant. So it's kind of crazy how that happened.
I guess because now you're explaining the time frame was so close. I didn't know that you found out before you actually was married. Okay, go ahead. Yeah. Continue.
Yeah, because I was going to propose to her on her birthday, but again, we found out right before I actually ended up proposing. So I proposed and I stayed engaged for a little while, and then I just jumped up on December 1st. We were at Logan's restaurant, and I was like, yo, let's go get married. And we just jumped up and went and got married because we knew we were supposed to be married in a way, because we had just meshed, and we had a good soul tie. You know what I mean? Because I know y'all talked about soul ties recently on the podcast. And a lot of times that's looked at in a negative light, but we had that soul tie that meshed with our emotions and our mannerisms and our spirits, and we knew it. So we just went ahead and got married. And again, when we had Rice, we had him in May of 2005. And again, I don't even think we had discussed if we wanted to have children or where we was going in life. But we just knew we was in love, and we just were going along. And I can't remember exactly where Michelle was working at the time. I think she was working at the Boys and Girls Club. And again, I was at Cracker Barrel, and we were just going along with it.
Okay. So then you go along, and actually not much longer later, 14 months later, we're 14 months apart, 14 months later, your second son comes along.
Yes.
You had transitioned to some other things. Where were you at that stage of your life, and, you know, how did you look at fatherhood different? Now, let me go back. Having your first child, did it automatically kick in the paternal instincts, or is that something that, yeah, it's there, but you had to grow with it? Because it seems like the maternal instincts are like there automatically. They bond with the child and everything automatically. But sometimes with the father, it's like, yeah, it's there, but it's always like a work in progress, if that makes sense.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. So when we first had Rice, I knew he was my son. I knew he was mine. Loved him. But I learned a lot about being a parent from Michelle, really, because it automatically kicked in with her. I didn't know what to do and how to do. Right. I knew I was supposed to be there. I just didn't know how. And there's no shame in it. Like you said, it's just for some reason that mama bear kicks in and they know what to do. And fathers, we're known to be the protectors, but we don't know that nurturing sometimes. And I didn't have that element. Because again, I was a dude, I was single at first, and I was just used to doing my own thing and used to being selfish and not knowing I was selfish, but I was used to taking care of myself. And now I got this little dude that's crying all the time. Well, now he was a good baby, but still, when he cries, I don't know what's wrong with him. So I had to look to her for like, all right, what are we supposed to do? And she kind of walked me through a lot to get me to that nurturing stage of being a father. So yeah.
Okay, so you take that, what you learned here, and so it had to be not long after you found out she was pregnant with, because if it's 14 months, it won't be like a 5-month gap that, you know, between conception, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
How much had you grown, and at what point were you at? Because it's only a short time frame, but you've had this experience, you have one, you're learning things. How much have you grown, and what were you at far as job-wise and things like that?
So by the time we realized that Rayel was coming along, I started to realize responsibility more. And so I went from Cracker Barrel by the time Rice was born, I was working at Walmart. When we found out she was pregnant, I was working at Cracker Barrel. I transitioned to Walmart and realized that Walmart was so boring and so dry, it wasn't doing anything for my mind. Like, I was just like dying inside, really, because there was no stimulation. So I knew I needed another job if I was going to have something with some benefits to, you know, take care of the family. So I ended up transitioning to Kelly Reynolds, which still wasn't there wasn't mind tingling, but it was better than Walmart. And at the time Rayel came along, I had more of a nurturing quality. I was all about getting up in the middle of the night. I was all about, you know, feeding and changing diapers and being there and playing with them and, you know, talking to them and, you know, all those type of things that a father's supposed to do. But again, I'm still only 25, 26. I was still a child, really. I thought I was a man, but looking back, I was still real immature. Because when you're at that stage in life, you're trying to take care of two kids and trying to be a husband, and still you're still clinging to some of your single mentality. Now, I wasn't out cheating and doing anything like that, but again, I still had some of that selfishness that I'm used to taking care of myself. And now I have this pressure of taking care of three other human beings, not making a lot of money, and there's a lot of pressure. So it causes you to lash out for no, there is a reason, because you know you can't take care of them. So it causes you to lash out, you know, on your wife and your kids and stuff like that. So, yeah. Yeah.
True. Question, going from one child to the second, did you expect it to be exactly the same, or did you learn that, one might not have cried or whatever. Like one of mine, she never sucked the pacifier. That was an anomaly because most kids do. So was right. You expecting it like, he doesn't cry, he sleeps at a certain time. Then you get one, and I don't know what the case was, that cries all night. You know.
Bruh. Rice was the perfect child, really. Rice used to have gas. So he would wake up in the middle of the night crying with gas. But Raya cried all night long. Like, I hate to say this. I hated coming home because he cried all the time, like nonstop. You would have to walk up and down the floor all night long with him. And as soon as you lay him down, literally as soon as you close your eyes, he was crying again. And so it was two different children, but we didn't know he had eczema. And then finally my mother-in-law said, like, y'all need to take that boy to the doctor. And we realized that he had, because I knew what eczema was, but it's just, sometimes if you're not educated on things, you really don't know what to do about it. So we took him to the doctor, got the medicine. And I mean, after that, he was okay. But yeah, it was literally two different worlds. And that was another part of the pressure of, I got three human beings I'm trying to feed, and then one is crying all the time. crying all the time. I don't even want to come home. So yeah. It was bad. It was bad.
So at this time you were still working at, you were still in Emporia. Y'all was still
In Emporia working at Keller Reynolds. Yeah.
Okay. So at what point did you decide, like you say, you got three people that you're responsible for or responsible to? At what point did the opportunity come and that you went ahead and transitioned to say, okay, I'm going to try this opportunity in law enforcement and move away?
So we were living on Slagers Lake Road. And another part of the pressure was the house we were living in, the water, if you cut on the faucet, literally sand and dirt would come out of the faucet. And the landlord didn't want to fix it. And we were struggling trying to convince him, like, dude, this is an issue. And he had this mindset, well, you can take a bath in it, just don't drink it. Like, bro, I got two kids here and a wife. We got to do something. We got to do something different. So I knew we were drowning. We were struggling, living from paycheck to paycheck. I'm not making a lot of money. Michelle's not making a lot of money. And I just knew I needed something. But it's important, and it's not a lot. Besides, and this is no down to any of the jobs out there, but if you weren't working at GP, Boar's Head, I think back then the Foundry might have still been open, you really weren't making any money. So Michelle's uncle, he used to always tell me, hey, Eric, man, you need to fill out an application for our police department. You'll make a good police officer. I never gave it any thought. But then this one particular Saturday, she was like, hey, Uncle Troy said you need to fill out an application. I was like, all right. Literally, I didn't give it a lot of, you know, I was like, all right, I'll try. And I filled out the application and started the process. So it was not like I sought it out. Life just happened and God orchestrated some things and put it in my path, because I didn't know what to do. I really did.
Okay. So at this point, it's just the two sons and the wife.
Yes.
Okay, at the point, were there any plan? Okay, you transitioning, going through that process, which that took about how long?
That took about 4 months. And keep in mind, we didn't have a dependable vehicle. We was driving my in-laws' vehicle. because the vehicle we had kept breaking down, and that's another part of the struggle. And it's not like we had great credit to just go out and buy some. Again, we weren't making money, so it's not like we could go, all right, we're going to put a down payment on some. Because even if we could, we didn't have the credit to do it. So, yeah, it took about 4 months with the background check, and then I almost didn't get the job. Because previously, before I met Michelle, I was living with a woman. Her kids weren't living with us. And you know how you do stuff on taxes. And I got audited, and that came up in my background check. And, you know, I had to reach out to the IRS and get a letter. And if anybody's tried to contact the IRS before, it's hard sometimes. It's easier now because of the internet. But back then, it was all phone calls, and you'd be on the phone for 30 minutes trying to contact somebody. And it was hard, and I almost didn't get the job. So they finally was able to write a letter explaining what happened, and then I was able to submit that. So yeah, it took about 4 months to get hired with the police department.
Okay, so at this point, were there any plans for more children?
No, not at all. We were good. We were chilling. So what happened was, when I finally got the job, I was in the police academy, and we found a house. Here in Suffolk, I was living here. Michelle was still in Emporia with the boys. So I missed about 4 or 5 months of them still, you know, being toddlers, because I would only see them on the weekends. I would go get them, bring them back Friday and Saturday, and then take them back Sunday. And then throughout the week, I was, you know, in the police academy. So yeah, there was no talks of having other children. We were doing fine. We were starting to, even though I was making more money, trying to catch up from all the stuff we had messed up on previously, I still wasn't making any money. So it was still like we were still spinning our tires even when we moved here. And so, yeah, there was no plans of having any more kids. There was, having children 14 months apart is almost like having twins. So we're still like, we love being parents, but it's still like one is in a car seat, one can barely walk. So you got a car seat, and then you're holding one. You're changing two Pampers. It was still a struggle. It was still a struggle, even in the transition.
Okay. So you go along, and a few years later, because Russell's how much younger than Roscoe is he?
Russell was born in 2010. So Russell is 4 years younger than Russell. He was born in 2010.
So fast forward along, because you're in the department.
I mean, then right here. I mean, Russell is 4 years younger than right here. My bad. Yeah.
Yeah, right here. Okay, so you're in the department, and you're actually doing very well. You've gotten different awards. You know, you're succeeding at your career. Respected by your peers. Seeing upstanding citizen in the community, and reliable. Oh, Michelle is in her field, in the child care field. I don't know if I'm saying that right.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, early childhood education.
Okay, I just wanted to use the right terminology. Early childhood education.
Yeah.
Of thriving in what you're doing, two sons growing up, and then boom, 4 years later, you find out again.
Uh-huh.
Your mindset at this point, after being on chill mode for four years,
uh-huh,
how did that go?
So I'm gonna hit you with the real, right?
Okay.
I was trying to get a pregnant. that was the only time out of the three I was really trying, man. I was like, yeah, this the one here. Doom. This the one here. Doom.
Wow.
He was made out of, the band boy was made out of love, baby. I'm trying to tell you, he was made out of some fun.
He was,
but you know what? I don't know why, though. It was something in my life, in my inside of my body, or how would the body work. The body is a magnificent specimen. The sexual organs, and I heard the girl saying it on the last podcast, the love doctor, what's her name? The sex doctor or whatever?
Love Doctor 369.
Yeah, how powerful the sexual organs are. And it was something inside of my body that was like really turning me on at the thought of getting her pregnant again. I don't understand it, but that's what it was. And she didn't know it, because we didn't discuss it. But I was, you know, So that's just what it was, man. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
So when she found out and she came to you or told you, did you have to act like you was like, what? Or was you like, yeah?
I can't remember exactly what I said, but I wasn't surprised. Because I remember when she took the pregnancy test and she showed it to me, I was like, you know, yeah, all right, call your mama.
That's hilarious.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. It is what it is, man. That's, you know, that's how life works.
Okay. So number three comes along. Mm-hmm. At what point of your career and everything are you at now? Because you've been on the force for how many years? I ain't been keeping up. Like,
by this time, I was on the force for 3 years. At 3 years, yeah.
Okay, so you're pretty comfortable in your career or getting comfortable. Third son comes. Do you feel like a father at this point? Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah, I did. Because at this point, I was getting to the swing of things, and I purposely, like on my days, like some people, and it is what it is, some people do what they want to do. On their days off, they plan to go out and do whatever they want to do and drop the kids off at a babysitter or whatever. My days off, I planned them with my sons. So whether it was, we're going to go grab some food, come back to the house, watch some movies, just go out, ride out, go walk around somewhere. I purposely did that because, and I, you know, our father did a great job raising us, did a great job. However, he didn't really talk a lot. You know what I'm saying? So I purposely made sure that, and even now, I purposely make sure that I have conversations with them, even as kids. So yeah, I felt like a father at this point because I made sure I spent time with them because I felt like that was really important. Even when I didn't feel like I wanted to just chill and do something else, I was like, nah, I'm gonna take them with me. And a quick story, it happened a while ago, but I was supposed to go out with a bunch of guys, but I wanted to take my sons with me. And they got mad, like, oh, we ain't got space for them, blah, blah, blah. I was like, well, I'm staying here then. Because my thought process is always this: if we're to teach men how to be men, they should see men being men. You know what I'm saying? So even though it's our chill time, they should see us chilling and how we operate around each other. So yeah, I felt that, to answer your question, yes, I felt like a father at this point. Yeah,
I feel you, because in certain situations, it's like, what are we going to be doing when my sons can't see it?
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. So, hold on. Let me make sure I'm getting to all of my questions.
I hope I'm answering the questions. I don't know. I'm just rambling.
Oh, you're doing an excellent job. Well, this is a real question. I'm going to try to word it so that if Michelle happened to hear it back, and I want to make sure your answer don't get you into the argument. Was it, just real talk though, was it ever so heavy that you miss not having kids and thought over possibly going back to like, nah, I'm good?
What do you mean? I don't understand the question.
See, I was trying to word it a certain way.
No, go ahead and keep it real. Shoot it straight.
Time you want to be like, I can't do this.
Absolutely. Yeah. So is your question that, like, was it ever so heavy that I felt like walking away?
Yeah. Similar plan.
Yeah. This year makes 17 years. So I would be lying to you and everybody else listening saying I never felt like walking away. I never felt like there was too much stress or too much pressure with, because sometimes you don't feel like showing up. You know what I mean? You don't feel like being responsible. I just want to be me. I just want to go do what I want to do. But I know if I don't show up, then they're going to lack something. And I'm pointing this way because they're out in the other part of the house. So that's where it's making me point that way. So I knew, when you got, especially like I said earlier, having kids 14 months apart, that's like having twins. So that's double the responsibility. And then as soon as they get a little bit older and getting the, they weren't self-sufficient, but you can kind of leave them in the room by themselves a little bit. Now we got another baby, so we're starting all over again. We've already done the kindergarten thing, the first day pictures and shopping and stuff like that. And we're getting rid of some of those clothes and being able to get that away. Now we got to start all over again. So yeah, there are times because again, even though making better money, but scheduling, missing a lot of birthdays and a lot of, you know, other little events because of the type of schedules police officers work. And then trying to be the good husband all the time and showing up for her. And then again, you got to show up for your kids and always be on. Sometimes you just don't feel like being on. So sometimes you can have in your mind, I could just go, I would never move back to your board, but I could go do something else and let them have it. But again, if I don't show up, then where is that going to lead them? You know, so.
Very true. Very true. As a father, what do you feel like is your mission to, what do you feel like is your goal to impart to your sons overall? Out of everything you do different activities and things. What's the biggest thing you want them to take from seeing you, their father?
Wow, that's a good question. Wow. I could make it generic and say how to be a man, but it's so much more to it than that. I think one of the biggest things is I want them to learn how to communicate. Because we as men, we don't communicate properly. We either lash out or we hold it in. And even now we're trying to get them to understand how to express yourself. Effective communication, I should say that, because anybody can communicate. Body language is communication. If I fold my arms, that's communication. I want them to learn how to express themselves and be comfortable being who they are when they express themselves without having to be the macho man or, I think that's one of the biggest things. I want them to learn how to communicate because again, our father did a great job raising us. I love what he did, but I think I was really in my mid-20s before I really knew that I could talk to him. You know what I'm saying? So I want them to be able to know that they can talk to me and they can be able to have a conversation with somebody else. And, you know, so I think communication is one of the biggest things. And how to treat people. Because the way you treat people, it really does come back on you. So I make sure that I treat people right because I never know who might be their boss one day or who may be in their path that affects their life. So I try to treat people right. And I want them to understand that no, you don't have to be a pushover, but you still got to treat people right. So, yeah.
Having manners and stuff like that still matters. Still, sometimes manners will get you in the door that money can't.
There you go. That's a bar.
Yeah, that's real. I've seen it happen.
Yeah.
People will give you the benefit of the doubt just from you being respectful and being marriageable. And because if it's sincere, it's something about people that have the same type of heart. They connect with that. Oh, they'll look at you like, oh, you good. You good.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I can tell you from a real place. You know,
absolutely.
Showing ultimate respect by doing that. Like I said, another reason I brought you on, I'm reiterating the reason I brought you on. You know, in our society, especially the Western culture, the United States, is so fractionated. The homes are so fractionated. Including myself, I didn't grow up in the house with all of my kids. I was in the house at some point with all of them, but two marriages, two divorces. I've been a father on the outside of the household. That dynamic is totally different. But having fathers in the household is still a good thing, and it's still a thing that happens. The bad baby daddies and the deadbeats and the thises and the thats get highlighted so much. But there are still men that are in the house, and being that you have three sons, that makes a difference. You know, having daughters, it would have been cool too, but as a man, you get to raise and nurture three men. With the statistics and everything, high prison population, crime rates and things, you get to affect three young boys' life to put them out into society and hopefully add to the positivity that's out there and not the negativity. You know? So I was gonna ask, how aware are you day to day in being a father? Is that, if that makes sense? How present? I know you mentioned that earlier. How present are you at all times, or is it sometimes you have to be like, "Yeah, I'm their daddy."
Yeah, I'm the daddy.
I mean, real life, man.
I know that wasn't supposed to be funny. I know that wasn't supposed to be funny, but he said, "Yeah, I'm your daddy." Ah. Man, that was funny. Oh man, that was funny, man. So being in the home, I try to purposely some point out of the day be daddy, you know. Again, even when I don't feel like, when Russell, he said, "Dad, you want to go out and ride bikes?" I don't really feel like it. You know what I'm saying? I don't, but I don't know what effect that's going to have on him later. So, all right, I'm going to get up and go ride bikes, because you never can get time back, you know? And a lot of times your no is going to make them busy to do something else. They're going to find something to do. So I would rather them, if they ask me to do something, I would rather do it with them. And there's some, along the way, along that bike ride, there may be a conversation come up that could be a teachable moment. You know what I'm saying? So I try not to miss opportunity. Then do I always show up? No, sometimes I don't feel like it, you know? Sometimes I know we got to upstairs. Sometimes they're upstairs playing, doing stuff. I should go up there and watch some TV with them or talk to them. I don't always show up, so I'm not perfect. I mess up. I lash out when I should. Sometimes, you know, go on somewhere, leave me alone. But I try to at least some point of every day show up and spend some daddy time with them. So, yeah. And sometimes it is like, when they call dad, be like, call somebody else. You know what I'm saying?
Anybody even else in here that could even fulfill that responsibility?
Right, right.
Okay. How important was it? Well, let me frame the question first. Because, of course, we had a good father. So in asking the question, it's just a real-life question. How important was it to you having your father in your life? And do you find yourself leaning more towards the things daddy did or taking pieces from it and realizing I have to fill in some spots?
Yes, absolutely. I find myself, it's funny because a lot of times I say stuff, and especially Raheel busts out laughing. He's like, "Man, you sound just like Papa Crawley." And I don't be trying to, but it just comes out. So I try to take pieces of what he did and what he instilled in us. But again, I do try to fill in some points that he missed, and not on purpose. And I'm missing some things. So I hope that when they have children, that they fill in some blanks. I try to now, as early as possible, I try to teach them about girls. You know what I'm saying? Because, you know, nobody really taught us about girls. Everything we learned about girls, we learned on the fly. I didn't know you couldn't turn a hoe into a housewife, you know, because all we saw was mom and dad's relationship. All we saw was mom and dad's relationship. So we saw a good relationship. So I thought all relationships could be like that. I didn't know about the bad girls, you know, so I try to teach them now. So even if they go out and make mistakes, at least they have something to fall back on. Because, you know, we didn't have that to fall back on. So I do take bits and pieces of how to take care of a woman, how to take care of a household, how to, you know, work, be a man. But yeah, I do try to fill in the blank, especially again with communication. I want them to be able to come and talk to me about anything. Even though, like Rise, he's a teenager. Him and Raya, they're both teenagers, but Rise can shut down on you. and really won't tell you everything. You got to kind of pull it out of them. And I understand that, but I want them to know that, yeah, they can come and talk to me when it's time. Because, you know, we, unless you were talking about Bible, you couldn't really say a whole lot.
And I was going to say that nowadays, I was going to say that's one thing, even though it clearly doesn't always work that way, we learned that leave the door open for communication. Now, if you don't choose to come to me, that's not my fault.
Right.
I try to live my life in a way that's open, so you realize I'm not a hidden person. I'm a real person. You can come and talk to me. You even see some of my mistakes. So that means when you make a mistake, you can come and talk to me because I'm human, you know?
Yeah.
But like you say, they got to go through them stages, and then hopefully on the back end, they'll look at you and realize you've done enough that they'll look back and say, I get it. I get what my daddy was trying to tell me. Or I get why he had to do it this way. You know, because all the time right now, they get it, but they don't want to. You know, it's almost like that, I guess like saying, almost like being out in the wild when you have to start branching away from, you want to start pulling away from the parent, you know, and doing your own thing, but you're not ready, but you just naturally start pulling away. You know, hopefully once you're out there, they'll realize, daddy was right, you know.
Yeah, because our oldest son, Rice, he's book smart, nerd, like quick on those books, never have to worry about his grades. But I think sometimes he thinks that's what's going to, it's difference between the book smart and actual application when you're out there in this harsh world. And I think sometimes he thinks that's going to get him through. And I'm trying to tell him, Rice, I've been there. I know what you're doing, you know, and he just thinks he is smart. But again, it's different when the world punching you in the face.
Once life slap them a couple of times, they'll wake up. I believe they'll wake up one and realize, even if daddy won't write, life don't care.
Yeah,
life don't care to my daddy. Life gonna slap him, and sometimes he gonna fall, and some, you know, so... When it slapped me, now, I get it now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Then hopefully they'll pick up the phone and y'all can have that conversation, or they'll just get it, you know.
Yeah.
Anything else you wanted to add to that? I kind of
cut. No, you're good. You're good. Mm-hmm.
Let me make see if I got any more questions because I ain't going to keep you long.
You sound like a preacher. I'm not going to hold you long.
Yeah. So this is going to come out on next Sunday, so this is my message. Yeah, I think I got to all the questions, but before we go, I just want to, like you say, once again, we're thankful for the mothers. We're thankful for all of the other holidays that, you know, people choose to celebrate. You know, a lot of love is given to the mothers, as it should be. You know, as Tupac said, we all got a name from a woman and our game from a woman. A lot of who we are is because of that womb we came through. So nothing we're taking from that. In society, the narrative is still being pushed that we don't take care of our kids, or that we don't try to take care of our kids. So much so that even some of our own have taken it on and believe that all of the black men are not trying to take care of their kids. So I wanted to bring on one that not only taking care of his kids, but chose to stay. I mean, that's just... As I asked you earlier, you could have left and joined the rest of us. That's just being real.
Absolutely.
Okay, so even for that alone, I respect that. I admire that. I'm your older brother, but in that regard, I look up to you. So I admire that.
Appreciate you.
I know what you're doing, and to all the, I'm going to let you do it. Give a message to the fathers, whether they're in the household, because a lot of us are not. Whether they are, but to those that are trying at all to be a father to their kids, give us something.
So first of all, to the fathers that's not in the home, my heart goes out to you because I know, again, time is something you can't get back. And I do think that society has, and you just talked about it, has pushed the narrative so that we're choosing child support over the physical being of the mentor. that fathers can be if they're allowed to be. So my heart goes out to everyone that has to go through that struggle. To all the fathers out there, happy Father's Day, regardless if you're in the home or not in the home. How do I say it? Change your story, change your narrative. You get a chance to change your narrative, right? Even if she is, even if y'all don't get along, don't call her baby mama, all right? Call her the mother of your child, because that changes your mindset. That changes your atmosphere, right? Because if you continue to say, baby mama did this, baby mama did that, that's going to continue to feed that negative energy. So say, hey, the mother of my child did this, the mother of my child did that. But it's going to make you speak in more of a respectful tone.
What's up, homie?
Your mindset. Because we get from trauma, your term. Hopefully, things around you will change. Every chance you get, reach out, be a mentor, be there. And sometimes kids just want you to show up. That's all. You don't have to have a lot of money. You don't have to have a lot of knowledge. They just want to see that you're there. And if you can just show up, then they'll appreciate that more in the long run. Be encouraged. I know it's not easy. And I want to say this the right way. Don't give up. That's the best way to say it. Don't give up. Stay in the fight. Because again, our kids need us just as much as they need the mother. I know they probably see the mother a lot more. They probably have to reach out to the mother a lot more, lean on the mother a lot more, but they need that fatherly protection also. So be encouraged. Keep doing what you're doing and don't ever give up. To the fathers that's still in the home, shout out to you. Again, keep being a mentor, keep being the father, keep spending time. And that's really all I got, man. That's really all I got. Happy Father's Day to you. You are important, regardless of what society says. Even if we don't see the sales and the big hoopla like we do on all the other holidays, you are important. Don't ever let anybody tell you that you're not, because without you, there would be no children. Yeah. So that's all I got, man. I wish I had something deep, but that's all I got.
That's perfect. I won't even try to put none on top of that too much. Look, I appreciate you coming on, man. Like I said, I'm not gonna hold you. It's the weekend. You gotta spend time with family, chill out, relax. I'm gonna go find me something to eat.
I think that's what I'm gonna do too.
Yeah. But listen, y'all, I appreciate y'all for tuning in. Happy Father's Day to all the fathers. Listen, don't give up the fight. It's gonna get hard, you might get knocked down. Even if you got to take an 8 count, get back up. Hit that subscribe button. It's going to be more good content coming. Hit the subscribe
That's
button.
That's it. That's it.
Like, comment, share, do all that. Hit that subscribe button. Look, I'll check y'all out later.
Tell Peace. Cookie I'm coming for her record, too. This is my third time. Tell Cookie I'm coming for her record.